This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Today on Morning Edition, WBUR's Deborah Becker had a provocative report on some tragic consequences when young people age out of the Massachusetts child welfare system. Her story raised several thought-provoking questions, and we'll explore potential answers in just a moment. But first, Deb is here with us in the studio. Hi there, Deb.
Hello there, Meghna.
So when people say aging out of the child welfare system, what exactly do they mean?
Well, what that means is when someone turns 18 and they're in the state system, they're no longer eligible for some services from the Department of Children and Families, and that's the state's child welfare agency. Now, recently, the state did allow some young people to voluntarily request services after they turn 18. Statistics show that about 70% of the kids who turn 18 do request those services. But in order to continue receiving them, the young adult must comply with the plans set out by the department, or DCF.
Okay. So you reported this morning that this issue is serious enough, particularly now, because there's an investigation going on among some state agencies. Why?
Well, there are two murder cases going on right now where the defendants are young men who did age out of the system. The most recent case is Donald Rudolph. He's 18 years old from Weymouth, and he is now undergoing a psychiatric evaluation after he was accused of killing his mother, his sister, and his mother's boyfriend.
Wow, so a triple murder.
That's right. And Donald had been involved with DCF for years. 3 years ago, the department became involved because of what it calls concerns of neglect on behalf of Donald. Donald Rudolph was placed in foster care until last year. That reportedly ended when he became violent. When Donald turned 18 last December, state services ended, so he aged out. But then he did voluntarily request services, and he had them for a few months. But those ended in May when the state says he was no longer cooperating.
Okay, but then we know from your story that I heard that Rudolph did go on to live at his mother's home in Weymouth, or he was at least at his mother's home in Weymouth. Did he live there?
Well, according to his lawyer, Rudolph appears to have been homeless for a time. He sometimes stayed with his mother, sometimes with his father, primarily with his father in Quincy. Donald was involved in some criminal cases as well. He was charged with receiving stolen property and assault, and he was placed on probation. And there were all sorts of little skirmishes, but then last month, of course, he was found at his mother's home, covered in blood, charged with the murders. Police there say that they knew he had a history of mental illness. And during his arraignment on the murder charges, Rudolph's lawyer, John Darrell, described Rudolph as having no connection with reality, as being psychotic. This is what he said.
I've had to tell the young man what he was being charged with, and he was shocked. I've been a lawyer for 30 years. And when I see this in somebody, I realize there's an issue here. Multiple hospitalizations, multiple prescriptions, multiple diagnoses, on and on and on.
So, Deb, a very stark case here, but this is the second murder case this year.
That's right. The other tragedy occurred in January. That involved 19-year-old Pericles Clergeau. He had a long history of mental illness. Pericles was in state care since he was 12 when his father actually asked the state to take over because he reportedly said he couldn't handle his son's mental health needs. After several foster care placements and residential treatment programs, it appears that Pericles was released at age 18 and was homeless. He found his way to a homeless shelter in Lowell, where he is now accused of killing shelter worker Jose Roldan. Now, I spoke with Roldan's girlfriend, Marianne Bowman, who met Roldan when they were both shelter residents. So she knew the other residents there, and she told me that the other residents and Roldan both told her that Pericles was very troubled.
He'd have his phone out and saying, "Oh, I'm going to kill somebody. I am." In fact, they told me that when Jose's laying on the floor, bleeding to death, Pericles took the knife out and then went like in a circle and said, "Don't anybody come near us, and it's all your fault. You made me do this. You made me kill him."
So, Deb, as you said, it was evident from his behavior that Clergeau was troubled, but was anyone aware of his extensive mental health history?
Apparently not. It looks as if he was drifting. He just sort of ended up at the Lowell shelter. It's known as a place for people to go if they have no other alternatives. Marianne Bowman says, to her knowledge, no one at the shelter knew about Pericles' history. And that's a big issue, Meghna, because once kids in state custody turn 18, they can leave the system. The records are completely confidential, so even from the parents or the caregivers. So no one has to release that information. So obviously a big gaping hole in what's supposed to be a safety net for kids in the system. And this is what several state agencies are looking at right now as they investigate these cases and whether these maybe these boys could have been helped and these tragedies prevented.
WBUR's Deborah Becker, thank you so much for your reporting.
Thank you.
So listeners, we're talking briefly about what happens when young people age out of state services when they hit 18 and no longer get state care for things like mental illness. What do you think state agencies are doing to provide 18 to say 24-year-olds with the help they need? And if they're not doing it enough, what can be done better? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're joined now by Cassandra Clay. She's a professor emerita at Boston University School of Social Work, and she's done a great deal of research on youth aging out of particularly the foster care system in Massachusetts. Professor Clay, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you, Meghna.
First, let me ask you, how does Massachusetts actually compare to other states when it comes to young adults with mental health issues and this sort of 18 to 24 age group?
Well, there have not been extensive studies in lots of other states, so we don't have a lot of comparative data. But I would say some of the data which we have for all of the states is consistent, not specifically about mental illness, but more actually about an issue which you address, which is homelessness. So in all of the studies that have been done to date on youth aging out of care throughout the nation, generally 30 to 40% report an experience of perceived homelessness or having been homeless. And in the study we did here in Massachusetts, 37% reported an experience of perceived homelessness.
So support for housing is one issue where I hear you saying that maybe that is one of those gaps that we're talking about in services. From your perspective, what are the other gaps? I mean, we heard Deborah Becker say that one of them is that because so many services for these young people were had when they were under 18, those files, that information is kept confidential and private, so there's a gap in information.
There is indeed a gap of information. I might frame it somewhat differently. I think what we would be recommending or the conclusions that we drew is the need for more interagency coordination. The fact that agencies, ideally we want them to be talking to each other before the child ages out, so that when the aging out process does begin, that those youth do not fall between the cracks, which tragically seem to have happened in the cases which we've just heard about. So if there were more interagency coordination, more data integration, our hope is that that would provide some support to these young people. And I know that the Executive Office of Health and Human Services, specifically the Office of Youth Development, is working on this. I mean, they're aware of the issue and are trying to resolve some of these interagency coordination problems.
Well, in fact, with the case of Donald Rudolph, we heard from Deborah Becker that, you know, he did request services from the state after he technically aged out and he got them, but that stopped when he was no longer cooperating. So that makes me wonder whether or not as well as Massachusetts does in this sort of 18 to 24 age group, are we just going to have to live with some holes in social services for this age group? Is it possible to reach out effectively to all young people?
Well, I don't know, unfortunately, whether we can have our arms wrapped around every child who has mental illness. I certainly wish that we could. But certainly youth who have had long histories of trauma and long histories of mental illness show some of the poorer outcomes. Mm-hmm. Now, if we think about what could we do differently, or there, how do we think about intervention and prevention, again, I think it's about making sure or trying to make sure that these young people are receiving services consistently when they're in the system, and then when they exit the system, having some smooth transition.
Professor Clay, last question to you in just the minute we have left. I hear you saying that interagency coordination is important and maybe some expansion of other state-level programs, but I also understand that the Department of Children and Families Commissioner Angelo McLean says that the agency has cut over $100 million from its budget in the past few years, and even though they preserved funding for transition-aged youth, it seems like an expansion of any programs or a significant one would be very difficult for Massachusetts to undertake.
Certainly difficult in these times of retrenchment. But I think state agencies have to make decisions about what their priorities will be. And we certainly hope that this will bring attention to the need for youth aging out.
Cassandra Clay is a professor emerita at Boston University's School of Social Work. Professor Clay, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on Radio Boston, a young mother confesses that she smothered her baby to death, but a judge rules her confession was coerced.
The case raises some disturbing questions about Massachusetts police interrogations. That's tomorrow on Radio Boston.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at Boston.com.
Our show is produced by Adam Ragusea, Jessica Alpert, Dan Mazzi, and Jason Breslow. Our interns are Gautier Giacomoni and Julia Lasagne.
Tim Skog is our technical director.
The executive producer of Radio Boston is Mark Navin.
You first, Anthony.
I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again, both of us, tomorrow for Radio Boston.